You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, the site manager over at Fear the Sword. Joining me today is Fear the Sword's head draft writer, the host of the Thick Jack Kramus podcast. You can also find his writing at The Step Back, Trevor Magnotti, on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we're going to talk about a bunch of things today. The draft lottery has happened. From your perspective, I'm sure this makes your life easier. I'm sure you're glad to actually be able to mock and sort of pick through this through your lens with an actual certainty of where guys might go. But let's start with John Beilein. The Cavs hired a head coach the day before the draft lottery. It is Michigan head coach John Beilein. As someone who watches college basketball much more than I do and has more of a take on John Beilein than how John Beilein and Jaron Simmons interacted, what is your take on Beilein as the new Cavs head coach?
I think that it was kind of, you know, I think that it was kind of bad process. I think that they really probably should have looked a lot harder at the assistants that they were vetting, guys who have kind of been in the league, know how that's going to be structured. I think that his staff is going to be very important, same as David Blatt's was when he came in, getting a good staff around him that can help him kind of manage the nuances of an NBA season is going to be very important. In terms of schematically, I think that he makes sense. He was the guy who was always kind of pegged as the college guy that would make the most sense in the pros the last few years, just because he runs a very NBA style offense and defense, a lot of kind of generating switches on offense and making his players make good reads consistently, and then on defense just having one of the best and most communicative defenses in the country the last couple of years, headlined by John Teske, but just a team full of athletes that all communicate well with each other and are consistently in the right place, definitely made a huge difference. So I think that he definitely could work for the Cavs. I think that he is, you know, a good potential option, especially for a team that is on the development side of the team building curve. But I definitely would have picked several other of the choices they were considering before Beilein.
So I'm with that. I also think the more I've learned about him, the more I sort of think how, like, I think the David Blatt thing is really interesting. I wrote a bit about this in a column. I wrote it for The Sword on Thursday, but for me, I think there's something different about him that I get a better vibe off of him. You know, I think about, like, him and David Blatt that both came in as these guys with offensive schemes, with offensive sort of like that is like what they were known for. Beilein seems to be coming in with like much less of an ego about this, much less of being less defensive about this. He seems to be more
Chris. That's an incredibly low bar, to be fair.
That is fair, but like it's very notable to me that he's clearing that like right away. Like, it's not something where he's like, you know, I know what I'm doing. Like, Black came in obviously very defensive, and I think there's reasons to understand why he was like that and empathize with it to some degree. But I also think, like, with Beilein, he's going to come in and it seems like he's going to, like, know that this is going to be adaptive. And everything I've read about him, everything I've come to glean about him over the last day or so, he strikes me as a coach that isn't, you know, he has his core values, he has things that he likes to do, as I think every coach does, but it seems like he's flexible to in a way that makes sense. And I think that's good. I also, from what I can tell about his offense and the way he's able to take non-top 100 recruits and get a lot out of them, Nick Stauskas comes to mind, considering how good he was at Michigan and ended up being a late lottery pick. Iggy Brzezinski is kind of a guy like that. There's other guys you could look at. I think there's something with what he does that seems to work, and we'll have to see if it works in the NBA. There's a lot of questions about, I wonder how he views this roster. I think in particular, that's a big question, but I like it. The more we've gotten away from the announcement, the Woj bomb about this, the more I've come to like it. Even if I do, like you, have questions about how they got to that process.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's just, it's going to be interesting to see kind of where the roster goes from here, because, you know, especially how he values the big men. I think that's a huge thing, because if he really is interested in kind of running a similar type of defensive system to what he ran at the college level, I think that makes Tristan Thompson way more important, because they need that guy who's going to be the consistent communicator that can kind of run the point from the five in the way that Michigan's most successful defenses did. So I think that he in particular is a guy that I would keep an eye on, and kind of how that relationship forms and what he asks Tristan to do on both ends of the floor, but especially on defense.
Yeah, I think Nance could be there as well, because there's a lot of Larry Nance's, like Tristan got a lot of the praise and I think attention for it, but I think Nance was as much screaming at dudes on the court last year as well. Before we wrap up this on Beeline, quickly, is Colin Sexton a John Beeline point guard?
Well, I think that there's potential that he could be. I mean, you know, John Beeline point guard is kind of a fluid idea, because the three major guys that he had at the point really were running Trey Burke, who was like a volume mid-range shooter type, who, you know, didn't really have much playmaking aspects to his game, but, you know, was a consistent shot maker. You had Caris LeVert, who was basically kind of like a 6'6 mutant point guard, who was kind of playing a little bit of wing as well, but kind of, you know, they ran a little bit more of a motion set with him. And then most recently, working with Simpson at the one, you know, he's very erratic, but a pretty decent playmaker and, you know, kind of on ball defender. So I think that's a little bit of a hard thing to quantify, just because I think he's made a little bit of everything work at this time at Michigan.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. Okay, so let's move on to the draft lottery. So we're in a position now where we see the Cavs are going to pick fifth. They drop a little bit. They're behind the Pelicans, the Memphis Grizzlies, the New York Knicks, and the Lakers. It seems like very much so right now that it's going to go Zion and Ja 1-2. If we want to, it's like, this is obviously very recent and things can change, but like that seems to be the first two guys in the order. It, to me, would be surprising, I guess, if RJ didn't go three. When you think about this draft, Trevor, and you think about what sort of prospects the Cavs could take there, Jared Culver, DeAndre Hunter, that kind of stuff, what was your just reaction to the Cavs ending up at five and falling from that two spot they were at?
Well, my initial takeaway was that Jarrett Culver now becomes a very realistic target for them. I mean, he has always been a guy that I think is getting valued by those that kind of pay attention to the draft far more than NBA teams do, and he was one of the guys that I kind of had pegged that, hey, if they land fifth, sixth, like Culver's probably still going to be there, and that's definitely kind of playing out so far, just because everything that has really come out about what teams are going to do at the top of the draft has all been counter to kind of the way that I see these prospects, meaning that I've said for a long time that somebody's going to make a mistake at the top of this draft, and several teams are probably going to make mistakes in the middle of this draft, and so far that's playing out. I mean, we've got rumors that Ja Morant is going to go number two. We've got rumors that the Knicks picking three really like Cam Reddish. Darius Garland is leaving the combine because he's got apparently a promise to be like a top six or top seven pick. All of this is really kind of falling into the Cavs' hands. They just have to make sure that they aren't also one of the teams making a mistake. And I think that, that one of the easiest ways that they could kind of back themselves into a really good situation would be a setup where, you know, we can realistically probably talk about RJ Barrett falling to five, at least for now, before or as we get a little bit more information on what the Knicks are going to do and what the Lakers are going to do. We'll kind of flesh that out a little bit more. But I mean, that's on the table right now. So I think that this ended up being a very good situation for the Cavs, and that's almost entirely because of who is in front of them. I mean, if Atlanta was in like the Knicks spot, and say a team like, you know, maybe Dallas or one of the other teams kind of lower down was in position above the Cavs, I would be very worried about what they're going to end up coming away with. But as it stands right now, I mean, you kind of have your pick of the guys that I would actually want to draft.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk more about this draft and look at Trevor's big board, which he posted his first one for this post-lottery world on Fear the Sword on Thursday. And if you aren't already, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and the new Himalaya podcast app. That's a great new podcast app that curates podcasts for you, the listener. It's got a ton of new features. It's designed for you, the podcast fanatic. So check that out. Download that wherever you get your apps, and that could be Apple, Google Play, whatever. We'll be right back. And we are back. Okay, Trevor, let's start really quick before we get into your big board. There's already been a report, some stuff coming out of the Combine, and I'll run through the couple news bits that have come out there. The first is that Darius Garland seems to have gotten a promise from some team, but it doesn't seem like he is going to meet with the Cavs. Secondly, there is a report out there that the Cavs met with Kevin Porter Jr. from USC, and they're also going to consider him and Bol Bol. That, you know, there's names that they've been linked to. I think Cam Reddish is obviously there, DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, Garland are sort of the big four. Porter and Bol Bol would definitely, I think, be wild cards. I think picks that I think would be not great at number five. I think the thing with this is it's the Cavs should be throwing out a bunch of stuff there. This is still very early in them picking five and stuff. They're probably also keeping their options open in case they decide to move back for whatever reason. If maybe there's that line of thinking out there that this draft is 5 through 14 is like kind of relative value, the same thing. So maybe they feel maybe they could get something from Atlanta or someone to go back and move back and pick other players or something like that. I think that's sort of the homework they're doing there. So I would not be in on them taking Kevin Porter Jr. or Bol Bol, frankly, but I don't like think it's a big deal that they're like talking to them and stuff like that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to take this through the lens of like these are the guys they're going to consider, not like the guys who not like they're narrowing down from a list of players that they're already considering into like maybe the two or three guys that they are really considering come draft night. We are still a long ways away from that. You can think of this as like the list of guys that they might invite in for private workouts, which definitely is not an indication of what the actual final decision is going to be. I mean, the Cavs brought in Anfernee Simons last year and didn't have a pick where they could potentially draft Anfernee Simons. So like I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into this. I am not super interested in kind of vetting, you know, what the fits of guys like Kevin Porter and Bol Bol would be in like a serious way, because I just don't think that like those are actual serious targets at this point. I think that's just kind of, I think there's a little bit over reporting going on right now on kind of who the Cavs are meeting with and what they're planning on doing. Some of it probably more reliable than others, but also, you know, this is just what teams do. So I'm not super, you know, I'm not super invested in kind of discussing the merits of like a Kevin Porter Jr. because I just don't think that he's a serious contender at this juncture.
I would agree with that. I'm 100% in agreement on that. I don't think he really fits Beeline either, from what I can tell.
He doesn't really fit anybody.
You heard it here first, folks. Okay, so let's get into Trevor's big board. Okay, so we have Jarrett Culver, number one. That's DeAndre Hunter, number two. to me, Trevor, when I look at the best options at number five, I think those are the two guys that I really would be the most interested in. I think you look. I think I'm super in on Culver. I'm in on Hunter as well. They're similar, but you know there is some difference. There are some differences there. I don't think you could go wrong with either guy. I would lean Culver. I think the floor is a little, the ceiling is a bit higher there. There's some, I think, some more superstar-ish potential there for him than Hunter, who just seems like he's going to be a super good 3-and-D guy in the league for a long time, which you need. But I think there's something potentially more special in Culver as a player. So I think those are, for me, frankly, the two guys, unless Barrett falls to five, which I'd like to explain how you... it seems like the Knicks and Lakers both do things that would be interesting, I guess, but Culver and Hunter to me would be the obvious two guys you really look at hard at number five if you stay in that spot.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're realistically at, and I like both of those guys because of the natural fit that they have on the way that the roster is currently constructed. I mean, you can't say no to having two wings that are both 6'8" and both have some ball skills and are both quality defenders, because the fit with either of those guys and Jetty is going to be really good. You can't say no to guys who kind of have high floors and also have a little bit of a higher ceiling. These are both guys that are going to take a long time to develop, which the Cavs have time to do that, but you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds where these are guys where I think they can provide some value right away for their teams and then also kind of grow into being something a lot more as they continue to develop, because they both have, you know, reasonable offensive ceilings that could be attainable. You know, they're the types of guys that I would be looking at in this type of draft where there's not really like superstar potential outside of one. There's not really a lot of guys who have, you know, safety. So I think that looking at guys who have reasonably high floors, have natural fits in whatever a modern NBA team is going to do, and also can provide a little bit of, you know, maybe some on-ball playmaking ability, which is going to be really important. All of that is really exciting. So these two are just far and away the best options for the Cavs if they can't get their hands on RJ Barrett.
All right, so let's just so it's clear, why for you is Culver ahead of Hunter on your board as we really start the zeroing in process for the draft?
I think it's mainly because I think that Culver sees the game a little bit better than Hunter. I think that he processes things a little bit quicker on both ends, but especially on offense. I think that Culver is a slightly better finisher, which is important. He's definitely not as good of a shooter, and he's definitely not as strong of a kind of like fundamentally sound defensive player, but I think that he's makes up for that by being a really good communicator, having really good court vision on both ends of the floor. He sees the way that offensive develop plays, and also kind of sees where guys are going to come open a lot better than Hunter does. And I think that he's just going to be a more functional athlete at the NBA level. So all of that kind of translates into him probably having a little bit better time kind of reaching like the higher ends of what their outcomes could end up being. I also think that while the systems that they played in were pretty similar in some regards, and especially on the defensive end, both guys are in good situations because of the defensive systems they played in. I really think that the way Texas Tech used Culver as an on-ball guy really is going to benefit him towards becoming that type of guy, because Hunter, I think, to a degree, is going to have to be deprogrammed a little bit because of how simplistic his role was at Virginia.
Well, and so I look at Culver, and I think about what I know about Beeline's system, where like you'll have different guards making plays, you have a lot of screens, where like then you set up other actions. It's a flowing sort of thing, which will be jarring, I think, for the Cavs to run. Frankly, it'll look very different. And I think this could really make sense is if you come in next year and like you play, one of your three man groups is Jetty, Sexton, Culver. That group's going to struggle defensively. They're still all very young. You know, Jetty, I think, has some bad habits defensively that he's going to need to break. Sexton is a disaster on that end. Culver is going to be a rookie. But you think about, like, a way to maybe make up for some of Sexton's lack of point guard vision. You think about ways to maybe start maximizing Kevin Love in an interesting way, and then maximize what Jetty does well and what Culver has the potential to do well. Like, that to me makes a lot of sense. We need to see what Beilein's actually going to run. But if I'm looking at what we know about Beilein, and if he runs something similar on offense, which I would imagine he will, it seems like it was part of the reason they hired him, to what he ran at Michigan in Cleveland, I think Culver makes more sense in that aspect than Hunter. At least from what I know about both guys. I could be wrong about that, but something about what Culver could be really interests me a little bit more.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, like, I look at what these guys' realistic, like, ceiling outcomes are going to be, and it just, Culver plays so much more like a backcourt player in just his style of play and kind of where I think the growth is going to come from him, whereas I think Hunter is going to kind of lock into being like that kind of 3-4 hybrid type, and kind of being like a maximized version of that, like, you know, realistic outcomes that I think would be pretty comparable for these two guys. I mean, I've used the, like, Rip Hamilton or Joe Johnson comparison for Culver as like a ceiling guy. But I think that, you know, he's kind of like that type that is like a tall two guard who's able to switch up positions. Whereas I think Hunter is probably more like, you know, kind of like a Thad Young that can shoot, a Marvin Williams, an Al-Farouq Aminu, one of these guys who's just a really solid linchpin type defender for a really good defensive system, and then also just kind of fills in gaps wherever he's needed on the offensive end.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back to talk a bit more about Trevor's draft board. And if you aren't already, just so you know, there are a bunch of other great Cleveland podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out Locked On Browns from Jeff Lloyd. Check out Locked On Indians with Jeff Ellis. And if you want to learn more about John Beilein, may I suggest Locked On Wolverines as well. We will be right back. And we are back with Trevor Magnotti, our resident draft expert here on Locked On Cavs. Again, I'm Chris Manning, the host of this podcast and the site manager for the sort. Okay, Trevor, I'm going to run through the rest of your board a little bit quickly here. And I'm just going to let you pick who you sort of want to touch on here. So 3, Brandon Clark, Coby White from North Carolina at 4, Bol Bol, we talked about a bit at 5, Cam Reddish at 6. He's obviously from Duke. A very interesting, I think, kind of conversation around him that I think we will need to certainly have the Reddish deep dive at some point. And then you have Grant Williams, PJ Washington, Darius Garland, Nikhil Alexander Walker. That is your top 10. Some of these guys, I think, obviously are more in play at 26 as opposed to 5. Who do you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I think we need to have the Garland conversation just because he's kind of being floated in the range of where the Cavs are going to be picking. I have him 9th below guys that there is zero shot that they're going to take. I mean, they're not going to be drafting PJ Washington at 5, but I definitely think that Washington is a better fit for what the Cavs are going to do than Garland is. So let's kind of go through him a little bit.
All right, so Garland, I'm just going to say this. There was, like, the reporting out there that, like, he was, like, a shooter and someone that Cavs was interested in. And, like, that, how he was described in that one report was very, like, weird to me. And, like, I don't love the Ja Morant and Colin Sexton fit, and that's obviously sort of off the table now. I hate the Garland fit more than I would hate the Morant-Sexton fit.
Yeah, I think that, like, I personally think that Garland would be a little bit better than Morant, just because I think that he's a little bit more functional playmaker if you're considering those two playing together. Because I think that Garland is kind of more of like a pick and roll initiator, whereas Morant is probably more of like an isolation initiator, which is, you know, going to be a little bit more of an issue. But yeah, I mean, you're pairing two guys who have a lot of skill overlap and are both 6'2 with really thin frames, really inconsistent to bad defensive value, and both struggle throughout their careers with channeling their scoring talent into productive overall team offense. I mean, that's kind of been the knock on Garwin since the beginning, even back in his high school days, is that he was a really good scorer who could be a really good pull-up shooter, but he really struggled in making that actually mean anything when it came to translating the wins. So I think that having two guys who have that problem that are both the same size, and Garland's actually a little bit smaller than Sexton, not great, I gotta say.
Yeah, I don't see the value of taking him at five at all. I don't even think, like, at five, based on, like, sort of what we know about the draft, what it's gonna look like. Like, we know that Zion's going number one. Like, that is happening. Number two, it looks like it's going to be Ja Morant. It, like, seems like the Grizzlies have, like, already decided that. Let's just assume that holds to be true. The Knicks, obviously, like, things, you know, let's just assume they take Barrett. Like, that just seems so obvious. Maybe they do something crazy. It is the Knicks. But, like, let's just, like, assume they take Barrett. The Lakers at four, like, is that pick getting traded? You know, is that pick going to be something David Griffin, you know, doesn't get his hands on, where the Lakers, like, take someone? What does that mean? I just, like, can't really see a scenario where, like, one of Hunter and Culver isn't there, for one. And then if, like, Barrett falls for whatever reason, like, you just take Barrett. I just don't really see, like, a realistic scenario where, like, Garland is, like, the best player available on the board for the Cavs and they just take him regardless of fit. Like, that just seems something to me that, like, isn't going to happen. And it, he also did get, apparently got a promise. He didn't talk to the Cavs at the combine, which would indicate there's some, not a ton of interest there from in some capacity. And secondly, he apparently got a promise from a team in the lottery, and it's Phoenix is kind of the team that it makes sense for. But he just makes no sense to me at that spot.
Yeah, it's just, like, at the end of the day, like, he's probably the third best point guard in the class, and also the Cavs don't need a point guard. And also, even if they do, the 2020 class is, like, all point guards. That's the only thing that is at the top of that class in terms of the one-and-done guys. It's all primary initiators. So even if you aren't sold on Colin Sexton, why on earth would you take a point guard from this class when there are actual, like, star-level primary initiators coming next year? At least a couple. So, like, the value is, when you consider kind of, like, the long-term build of Garland, is minimized greatly as well.
And if you're looking at, like, let's say you wanted to take a point guard at five, Coby White makes much more sense.
Much more sense.
Like, you talked about this. Like, it's the fit with Sexton could be, to use your word, clunky. But, like, he just would seem to make, like, in terms of his ability to do a couple different things, his size compared to Sexton, he just, like, would be the guard that if you're going to take one, you're like, this is what we need, which I don't think is a need necessarily. I think, like, he would make much more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you want a guy, if you're going to take a point guard, who is going to kind of take what Sexton struggles with, which is really the, like, initiation of offensive sets, and take that out of his hands and give him instead the keys to being, like, a play finisher. And to do that, you need a guy who is not also a play finisher, which is what Garland and Morant probably are.
We will. So I'm going to say, let's talk about one more guy, but let's push the, I just want to say, Trevor and I will have the Cam Reddish conversation. It is worth having. I think that, like, he's certainly going to be in play at five. He seems to have been told he's going to be picked 3 to 10. The Cavs are obviously in that range. We will have the deep dive into Cam Reddish, because I do think, you know, like, while there are some concerns about him, I do think, like, he does not benefit from, like, playing on the same team as RJ Barrett and Zion. Like, I felt kind of bad for him. Like, just, he's at the lottery with his friends, but, like, they're getting fawned over, and, like, Zion is, like, has, like, a bajillion cameras on him, and Cam Reddish is, like, an afterthought in that trio. Like, I feel some empathy for him as, like, a human being. That's not, like, an easy situation to be in for a kid who's, like, 19. But as a player, we will have, like, the Cam Reddish deep dive. Let's talk about Brandon Clark real quick.
Yeah.
He, to me, like, would be interesting. I'll say this. I am more, if they were to, like, move back, let's say, like, they traded back with Atlanta or something like that, to me, he makes more sense at that spot than he would at five. But I also like get how he could help, even if the fit isn't like an obvious thing on the roster based on how it's sort of constructed right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically asking him to do all the things that Larry Nance is being asked to do, and he's probably going to have a good chance of being better at those things than Larry Nance is. Because like Nance is like a good NBA finisher. Clark projects to be a great one. Nance is kind of like a, you know, or Nance is like a okay to good screen setter. Clark is a very good one. They both kind of have about the same shooting potential. And then, you know, Nance is like a highlight block, like rim protector, whereas Clark is like actually like a functional defensive rim protector. So like, I think that you're kind of like, you're putting the writing on the wall with Larry Nance if you're drafting Clark, but just the fit next to Kevin Love is just beautiful between those two, because like then you have a guy that is kind of functionally playing the five on offense, allowing Love to be kind of like the initiator from the four, and then also is kind of saving Love on the back end on defense, because suddenly here's a guy that can cover a ton of ground on the interior, can really do a good job in drop coverage on pick and rolls, and also, you know, is kind of like your last line of defense at the rim, and he potentially can play like the three or the four on defense as well, and be able to switch across multiple positions. I mean, he's the type of guy that you really want to put with a guy like Kevin Love, who's best used as like a defensive rebounder type. It just makes a ton of sense, I think, on both ends. And I really like the fit of him, kind of rest of the roster be damned a little bit. He's just a really, really solid choice to put with the guys who actually matter on this roster.
Yeah, and I think it's a question, you know, if I would say Nance is in the guys that they're going to keep. But I think you could do worse than, like, if you had a three-man big rotation of, like, Nance, Clark, and Love with like maybe like Nwaba, or like, you know, if you take like a Grant Williams or something later on, like I think something like that could be workable and kind of modern. Is there a scenario where he to you would be in play at five though?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he had a great day today. Like coming out, getting over a 40-inch vertical leap, measuring the way that he did. You know, he is a guy that stood to gain a lot from the combine, because if he can prove that he can shoot in those kind of stationary and off movement shooting drills, and he tested athletically the way that he did, like suddenly he becomes more palatable, because like, the kind of thing on him is like he's this great producer and kind of great fundamental guy, but like, you know, the shot was an issue. He's a little bit older, and you know, we wonder about how he's going to hold up at 6'8", probably being a center functionally in the NBA. And I think that he went a long way to assuaging a lot of those concerns. I think that some team in the top 6 or 7 is going to get him in for a workout and get completely sold. And I think that's probably where he's going to end up going. If he doesn't, then he's going to end up being one of the steals of the draft, especially if he's going like 13, 14. So I don't think that would, I'll just put it this way. I would think that Brandon Clark going five is way less insane than the idea of Kevin Porter or Bol Bol going five.
Yeah, Bol Bol is number five on your board for the Cavs. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in the future as well. But we'll wrap it up on this, Trevor. It is draft combine right now. There's a lot of metrics and measurables and things being thrown out there that people can look at for prospects. What is just your breakdown of how you evaluate guys based on how like they test athletically and their physicals and stuff like that versus what you see on tape and what the metrics tell you?
So I really look for guys who kind of don't make a ton of sense to me in terms of what I see versus what either their body build looks like or what their statistical production looks like. So I look for kind of, you know, the combine to maybe be like a gap closer for me. So a good example of that would be a guy who tested very well today. That'd be Cam Johnson of North Carolina. Really high quality spot up shooter, one of the best and probably the best off-movement shooter in the draft. Really solid defensive player as well from like a fundamentals understanding the game perspective. But he looks like he's 36 years old when you watch him move around the court in college. Seeing him test a lot better than I expected athletically was a huge relief to me, and he's going to be a guy who's going to be moving up for me in my next big board rankings, because if he is actually an NBA athlete and he can actually put that defense to functional use, he suddenly becomes like a Kevin Huerter type, where, you know, he is a kind of game changer as a floor spacer and is going to be able to survive to contribute on the defensive end. And that's what those types of guys need to be able to do. So, like, he is a guy that I paid a lot of attention to how he looked. Obviously, injured guys are huge for me. I want to see that they, if they participate, that they look like they're healthy. So that's always nice. And then, you know, I look for guys who are just kind of like outliers in one way or the other. So a good example of that is I get asked a lot why I have Tyler Herro is like my 60th rated prospect in this draft class, when he's probably going to end up going at the edge of the lottery. And that's because he came out and measured, or he's a shooter who's kind of one dimensional, and he came out and measured at 6'6 with a 6'3 wingspan, which is insane, and definitely is going to limit him being a potentially productive or at least survivable defensive player in the NBA. And if he's not that, he's not a good enough shooter to just make money off of being a good shooter. So, like, that's another thing that I look for. So with these measurements, I'm mostly looking to kind of, like, close the gap on things that I'm already seeing, or kind of counter things that I'm seeing, and just kind of get a better understanding of kind of the things that don't make sense to me.
You can find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Find his writing at Fear the Sword, at The Step Back. Check out all of his work. It's all great. You're going to learn a lot from listening to him. And we're going to do a mock soon. We're going to have a Cam Reddish podcast soon. But we're into draft season for real now. Trevor, thanks, man, for coming on, as always.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Everyone, we'll be back on Monday. TBD show. I'm running a half marathon on Sunday. So if there is no show on Monday, it's because I just ran out of energy, basically. But you'll have a podcast either Monday or Tuesday of next week. A whole bunch to talk about. John Beilein should be talking at the beginning of next week as well to the media for the first time. And there's a lot could happen this weekend because it's the NBA and stuff is always happening. But have a great weekend, and talk to you on Monday or Tuesday, whenever I have time. Cheers.